You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Tēnā tātou katoa. Nō mai hoki mai ki tēnei kaupapa kōrero or the Physics Room. Nō mai, whakarongo mai, whakatau mai. My name is Abby Kinane and I'm the director of the Physics Room, a contemporary art space dedicated to developing and promoting contemporary art and critical discourse in Aotearoa. Based in central Ōtautahi since 1996, we assist artists with resources and opportunities to enable creative and professional development and work to support the acknowledgement and understanding of contemporary art among New Zealanders. Our goal is to actively seek links between the arts and other areas of cultural production, and to involve art as a contributing voice in wider intellectual, social, and political debate. In this episode of Art, Not Science, I chair a panel discussion with three local practitioners who use clay and ceramics in their work. In response to our current exhibition, Bedrock, with Emerita Bake, Maya McDonald, and Nawia Tutunguru, we invited Alex Ashworth, Caitlin Clark, and Dave Marshall to talk about the politics and practicalities that come with using these materials and processes. They discuss their influences, inspirations, and communities, as well as aspects of sourcing and firing materials within Aotearoa and beyond. We were also lucky to be joined by Maya McDonald via Zoom. Alex Ashworth's practice works with ideas of identity and belonging through ceramic sculpture, focusing on narrative. She works from her home studio, and personal reflection influences her work, which often evokes an emotional response. Holding a Bachelor in Fine Arts and Pre-Trader of the Year in Toolmaking, Alex's eclectic learning choices led her to explore clay through Otago Polytechnic. After graduating in 2018, it became apparent that uku was the medium she'd been searching for. Caitlin Clark is an artist based in Ōtautahi. Since graduating from Canterbury University with a BFA in 2017, Caitlin's work has been primarily focused on environmental issues to do with resource management, labour, and familial memory. Caitlin's ceramics practice is based on forage clays and minerals. Alongside this, Caitlin holds sculptural, video, installation, and public projects. Dave Marshall is a potter and artist, currently based in Granity, Te Tai o Potini, the West Coast. Dave has worked with locally sourced clay and minerals in both pottery and painting for several years now. This has been a sustaining experience for him, and he thinks there's a lot to be learned from the things around us the closer we go to their source. Now, let's head into the gallery to hear from the panelists. Kia ora mai tātou. I'm really lucky today to be sitting beside some amazing artists, and we have another artist, Maya McDonald, who's with us on the computer here. Whereas we're talking in the context of Bedrock, which is an exhibition featuring the work of Maya McDonald, Emerita Bake, who's made the quilts, and then Nawia Tutumoro, who's made the works in the space next door. And basically with this discussion today, we really wanted to elaborate on some of the ideas in Bedrock, very specifically looking at the medium of ceramic or uku or clay, and thinking about some of the tikanga and the practicalities around working with that very specific medium and the forms, I guess, that come with that. So I have Katie Clark and Alex Ashworth and Dave Marshall with me.
And Maya McDonald, of course. Maya, this is Everin.
You're famous. So I thought just to start off, maybe we can start with you, Katie, if you could just introduce yourself a little bit, talk about how you came to be, your background with clay, and then maybe a little bit about your practice now, what that sort of looks like.
Cool. Kia ora. I'm Katie. I started doing clay when we were doing casting in first year at uni, and that was more about practical making of things and things like that. But I remember Bronwyn, who was my tutor at that time, laughing at me because I was just having real fun smushing my fingers into the balls of plaster clay and actually just casting my fingers. And so I kind of continued through art school making all sorts of things. And when I finished, clay became sort of like a really enjoyable thing to do that you could do in your home. And then I started really kind of connecting with it as in something that's quite like healing. You know, you don't have to think so much. It's that space of emptiness. It's just kind of like drawing for me. And then I kind of discovered, well, I really like walking as well. So I was up in the hills a lot and I was kind of finding all these rocks that were like wonderful. And I was like, oh, I want to make these. So I started kind of foraging a bit more and kind of coming across like clay deposits by accident where people were giving me things. And so my practice has really evolved from there where I kind of, you know, like, I got gifted this bag of clay from someone's yam plot in Dunedin. She, like, came up to me and was like, here's this clay. And I was like, oh, cool, okay. So, you know, working with various different types of clay and marbling them together, and my practice at the moment is really thinking about kind of how I can kind of be more active participant in the world, where I'm aware of everything around me and I have a relationship with it through clay, and through clay I have a relationship with being in the world instead of just like on it or around, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's me. To talk more about.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, Alex.
No whanganuia tara hai. Engari e noho ana ki ōtutahi. Ko kaitahu rātou ko katimamai ko waitaha o ku iwi. My base is in fine arts. I did film. And I'm not sure how I made it through, but I did, and I never want to make another movie again. but from there, I'm a maker, always have been a maker. So I've done tool making, got pre-trader of the year as nice. Part of that, and have always been a knitter, sewer, spinner, anything I could get my hands on, really. My start of clay was doing like a rising home class, which is a community college. And then realising that I had the knack for it, and then doing the diploma in ceramic arts through Otago Polytech. And I took a little bit of time to do that because I wanted to have my final year as part-time, so I got 2 full years to explore where I wanted to go as an artist. And during that time I got all my technique right. So I learned all the technical skills I needed to carry on, but I wasn't quite ready to explore where being Māori sat within that.
Mm.
And then once I graduated from that diploma course, that's all I can make. So I've been making oku work for the last 3 years, 4 years maybe now. Yeah, and I've just started connecting a lot with the Ngā Kaihanga Uku group in Wellington and up through the North Island. And I guess with my work, I'm just looking to tell the next part of the story. I've tried making work about other stuff, but I just end up making it about me. So that's what I've been doing.
That's yeah. The best story.
Yeah.
Kia ora.
Kia ora koutou, everyone. I'm Dave Marshall. How did I get into clay? I guess like I come to clay through like a fine arts background. I studied sculpture. I always tell the story. It got to like the last year of sculpture degree, and I was like, what have I actually learned here? And like, what's actually around me that kind of that's there? And it became obvious that there's like kilns and clay and glazes and stuff that had all been sitting there for about 10 years and no one had really like played with it that much. So that's what I picked up. So the last year of my degree I was just like doing with clay all the time and learned quite a lot that way. And then I guess as time's gone by, eventually I started getting to work with like local materials. Or I guess it dawned on me, it's like, you have clay and you always buy it in a bag, mm-hmm. and then you're like, wait a minute, this is like everywhere. So I started looking at like clay and how you source that, what it is, which is like a whole trip into itself.
Mm-hmm.
And also like glaze materials and other materials. As soon as I started like delving into that, then like a whole another world of sort of possibilities open up. And you just start learning more and more and more. That's mm-hmm. fantastic. Yeah.
Thank you. It'll be really good to go a bit deeper into that shortly. I wondered if we sort of thinking about this, like where you connected with clay in the first instance and then your practice in the present. I was thinking about the sort of your sort of whakapapa with clay or with creative practice in general, and thinking about who, this is actually a question that came from Maya, but who your mentors are or who your like wise people that you go to with technical challenges and of course with challenges of concept and of process. Yeah, who are you kind of able to turn to in those moments? Open to anything.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm part of Portal Pottery Club, and So all the ladies there are just like, great. They're scary, but they like know what they're doing. It's taken me 3 years for them to want to talk to me.
Geological time.
Yeah, yeah, actually, it is. But now I'm like in-ish, then I've been really cool. Yeah, yeah. and I'm learning a lot from all of them. Some of them have been doing clay stuff for like, you know, 40, 50 years. So there's just that level of knowledge that you've kind of got to dig into. But I think also I just find like, I just have this collection of nice stones and shells and stuff, and I'll get them out and I'll lay them down, and that's like the thing that really like drives me to keep making, because it's like I just can never make anything as cool as what the ocean brings up or whatever, you know. Yeah, so those are my two things.
This who we look for help. Me, I'm friends with Hana Rakina, and she's just down the road from me, so we talk a lot about, I guess, the process and the awkwardness about telling your story in front of people. But recently I meant to be doing a big sculpture up in Auckland, and I've got Karuna and Todd Douglas helping me out, and they're part of the Māori clay group, and sometimes I flip Bay Riddell and Wee Taipa a question when I need to. And it's nice to have a group of Māori makers that you can chat with about that, who have been doing that for a long time. Other than then I experiment, and if it explodes, then it explodes.
I feel like maybe when I started out with the fine arts thing, it was in the fine arts world, which, I don't know, it feels like a little bit more fragmentary, and it was quite nice. As soon as I got more into pottery and just delved a little bit deeper with it and started to sort of learn the history, then you start meeting all these different people, and you have like a little bit of shared language from like you're dealing with clay and glazes and all this stuff, and you kind of talk to people about that. And just, I guess I met like quite a lot of potters that were of like quite an older generation. There's a bit of a gap, probably like most people were in their like 60s or 70s or so, I think. But they were all really like willing to talk about clay, and I just like do that thing, have a chat about clay. And so it's been amazing, like with pottery, just to come across that group of people that's really welcoming and is like happy to share knowledge and talk. And so I think.
Just a question to you, Dave, about being a part of the fine art world. It's been quite a new thing for the fine art world to be accepting of uku or clay. Like, it's quite a recent thing, maybe in the last 5 years it's kind of happened.
Yeah, I hope so. Like, it's kind of like a friendlier scene. I think, like, hopefully that's good. Like, the fine arts world is being more open and generous and, like, more community focused or something. And maybe it's, like, going towards clay, like, it's embracing that because it has all those good values to it. I don't know.
It's an interesting thing.
Is that the craft fine art debate?
It's something fresh.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Can we return to this thing of the sourcing of clay? And obviously, like, I'm super new to this discussion, but it's definitely something I think about with really all materials, whether they're kind of organic or synthetic materials. It's a discussion that I want to say every, but many contemporary artists are working through the problems of like sourcing ethically and efficiently. And maybe if each of you could just talk about where the clay that you work with is from, maybe the issues that arise from that and some of the ways that you've been able to address them or decisions you've made around sourcing clay.
So I get a lot of my clay from around Te Waipounamu, but I think a lot of it is just through talking to people. It's like the clay community. Some of it is really terrible, and it's just like turns into little body poos and killed. Some of it explodes, but I think that's the fun part about it, is like you can never quite, you just never know what it's going to look like when it comes out of the kiln. So I think that drives me to keep playing. I often just will go for a walk and find like a seam, and will be like, oh, that's interesting, and maybe I'll return back with like a pot and take some. But I never take more than a bucket. I don't really need that much, especially when you've got like three buckets worth going at the same time, and that's kind of fun to like mix one bucket with another and blah, blah, blah. My favourite lot of clay that I've ever got is some that Dagan Wells like took Hamish and I down to in Riverton, at this place called Gemstone Beach on Tawaiwai Bay. And there's just these huge eroding cliffs, like they move every week, basically, it's crazy. And there's just these massive boulders of clay. And I think I got three different colours from there. And Maya, you saw the one that's like it's just like amazing. It's like white with black dots in it. There's like, you just, it's just so hard to use, but it's like amazing when you fire it. So that's just like always the driving forces to find more things like that. Yeah.
This is quite an ignorant question, but how do you know when you see a scene? Like, what do you see?
Well, like, for instance, me and the cousins were up in Dunedin one time and we're walking up a hill that we used to go up quite a lot, and Britain fell in a scene because it's just like soggy wood. Oh. Yeah, it's just like, and you touch it and it's got that feeling like of clay. Slippery. Yeah, slippery. Yeah.
Yeah.
So not so gritty, like dirt. Like
yeah, yeah.
Other soil, maybe.
Like if you get a little sausage of it and like,
yeah. So it's like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Do that.
We're all licking our fingers together.
I come back. Thank you.
Oh, for me, I buy my clay.
Yeah.
And then I recycle. So I'm still working on recycle that I had from the first year I was using it. I only fire what I think is appropriate to fire because I can recycle anything that isn't fired in the kiln. I am planning on foraging, but for me it's really important that I whakapapa to where I'm digging. So my plan is to go to have a bit of land in Arawhenua, which is Temuka, and I'll be digging and making a piece specific to do with my whakapapa from there.
Mm.
I do collect different sands in small amounts, or I'll create like ash from Te Kauka or items like that, and then I'll fire them and create glazing pieces from those. But when I do it, I'm very conscious of whose land I'm on and their story and how that mixes with my story and how I present it to other people, and really to share the story around so that people, oh, I don't know, I can't change anyone else's mind, but I'd like to put it out there, the idea that mana whenua were there first, really. Yeah. Sorry. Well, it just, yeah, because, and especially if you're making money off the work. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's really
important thing to
make money.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's really true. When I was first thinking of the clay, I was like, oh, great, here's some clay, and I would, like, be greedy about it, and then take it, and then it's like, it's not long before you figure out, like, what am I doing here?
Mm.
And you have to, like, start, then all of these issues come up. What are you giving back? Whose land is it? Where does mana whenua fit in? Where do I fit into that? All these questions come up as soon as you actually start dealing with it. But I think I had to make a few mistakes and be greedy and do something stupid, and then be like, whoa, 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 what am I doing?
Mm-hmm. But it used to be that way. Someone would find a good scene, they'd give everyone a call.
Yes.
Everyone would come in.
Yeah.
And take some clay. Right? Yeah.
And it's not like clay's special in this respect. Like all natural resources, right, would raise similar questions. And then what's the alternative is like with plastic or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, not that I know of, is there a problem-free sort of medium.
And there's a finite source of clay.
Yeah.
It takes 30 million years or something to make a seam in the compression through the earth. So we have to be careful with that.
Yeah.
There's other things to do with being Māori around that as well. And that's recognising Pakotuanuku and Hiniahu on there as well. So the first woman. I'm aware of that when I'm collecting anything.
Mm.
Yeah.
Would you want to share the story of Hiniahu on there?
Oh, yeah. So she's the first person, human, made out of clay by Tāne. And so he fashioned her from clay and then went to give her hongi. And as he did, he sneezed and she came to life, which is why we say tihi Māori ora. And they together had a child, Hine Titama. Tāne made her his wife, so child and wife. She found out and decided she would, you know, is she the first case of suicide throughout that? I forget. And but she came, Hine Nui Te Pō, anyway, the guardian of the underworld. So that whole family line is really important, and especially because mana wahine and because Papa Tunuku is so, I don't like to get too spiritual about stuff, but it does all feed in when I'm making, and because the uku, that word comes from papatunuku, it's all connected together whether we want it to be or not. So when we use uku as a translation for clay, it's not, it's so much more than just clay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a good story for thinking through the potentiality of clay as well, right?
Like, yeah.
That is this living.
It's like a body that moves and, yeah. and we connect with it through our body, you know, and it's a very intense feeling as you're processing it through. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Maya, did you want to answer that question as well about sourcing clay? I know we spoke about it quite a lot during the development of this exhibition and also that the works in this room have all got different sources for the clay, eh?
Yeah, it was mainly because I was making up in the Coromandel and we were making and sourcing the clay and it was easy to find at that point. But then when I moved back down to Taranaki, it's not as easy to source clay in that area. So I ended up sourcing some Irish clay, and the little strikers are actually made from the Coromandel clay. When I gave my artist talk, I was actually talking around when I was sourcing the clay in the Coromandel, going to Papatua Nuku, and you're taking that ancestral knowledge with you. That was when I was using karakia, and that neutralizes the space and basically takes any form of tapu into a state of noa. So yeah, that's my process of collecting clay and neutralizing a space. Yeah.
Have you worked with clay from Taranaki?
I actually have never worked with any clay from Taranaki, but I'm really happy that I have not, because there's just such a huge history of war. The uku that I've worked with, it always carries like a modi, which is what I describe as like a feeling or a vibration. And I don't think it's quite a difficult one where I know there's just so many parasites and all sorts of terrible things that have happened up here. So I don't think I'd ever use the uku from Taranaki.
Mm. Mm. That's really interesting. Yeah.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
So I was thinking about sourcing and then moving into the next stage of working with the clay. Is there specific tikanga protocol, just practical things about working with clay that you've kind of learned that this is in the studio phase or in the making phase? Or if not in the firing process, again, are there particular, maybe even speaking to the glazing, some of these aspects of process, I guess I'm thinking on one hand practical things that you learned and on the other hand all the other things that come with the practical. Quite a big question, sorry.
So a short version?
Yeah. Can you return to your comment about glazers before and what you've learned about working with glazers in the local context?
Ooh. I don't know if you guys feel this, like glazing is kind of a little bit different to the pottery part, but kind of different worlds. It takes a little bit to like switch your mind. I'll always be making clay and then I'll stop there and I won't be working with the clay anymore. I'll just go into glazing if I'm doing that, because the two are hard to describe, but just like different activities.
How so? Is it like one feels more like science-y or more kind of like rational? Like what is the...
Well, you go from like working with your hands, like glaze is quite often with a brush or pouring.
Right.
It's just a different sort of activity. It's like painting. Mm. And then clay, I don't know, feels like a bit more physical.
Mm-hmm.
This painting has got more distance.
Mm.
Also, you might be trying to guess what the glaze is going to do as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it never really does what you want it to do.
Never even.
So true.
Sometimes you have, like, there are some issues where, like, a glaze doesn't fit with the clay. Like, sometimes that will happen.
Mm.
Which weird stuff happens.
There's, like, a material, like, incompatibility kind of.
Yeah. Mm. And I think Alex's show at Absolution was pretty fantastic in showing how the glazers were reacting with the clay, because you're like, here's the clay, here's the glaze material, and you could see everyone was like looking at them like, oh, it's doing this, and that one's bubbling right up.
Mm-hmm. Some of them totally fractured pieces because the thermal expansion was different from the glaze item compared to what the clay was.
Yeah. And were you aware of that going into it, that you were like,
I'm always prepared for anything to explode.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was just to show that I had 80 pieces, and part of the story was having those 80, and whether they broke or not, they had to go in. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the ones that sold straight away, because people really like the idea of the connection between the two things as well.
Right.
Yeah.
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 So the narrative of it actually being under so much pressure that it exploded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just making mini Earths inside our kilns, mm-hmm. really. We're mm-hmm. just speeding up the Earth's process. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's such a cool way of seeing it.
Yeah.
So they have to be 80.
There were 80 because I wanted to use 4 colours of clay and blend them perfectly so that they had an ombre effect from brown to grey to white to mm-hmm. black to brown again for a full circle. Mm-hmm. And I needed 4 clays for Ngā Hauewha, the 4 ones. So, yeah, and there were 20 items that I wanted to use in the kiln as tonga rather than using them as just a cabbage tree leaf that I have 100 kilos of at my house on the ground, you know. I wanted people to see them as something a bit higher than that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
I suck at glazing. I know nothing about it.
Are there alternatives? Like how can you
measure? Yeah, you can do stuff like wood firing. I've done one in Agama where it's just like big brown egg with like green spots on the top and you're just like, how does this happen? But I actually try, like, I buy my clear glaze and I only really use clear glaze because the clay underneath is so beautiful. I don't really want to cover it up.
Mm.
And it's a world that I really want to explore more, but I kind of just get obsessed about the making side and don't really think too much about the glazing.
Mm-hmm.
One day I'll get there. Mm-hmm. That's a new area for me. Yeah.
The glaze can often ruin a piece, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you can have a perfect one. And then you can glaze it and just fall out the window. Yeah. So you have to be conscious of what you want to glaze it with while you're making, really. Mm. Yeah, and even then it may not do what you want.
And then you have to live with that thing for 10,000 years.
Yeah. What I mean by that is as I'm making a form, if I'm going to glaze it, because I don't glaze very often anymore, I will know the colour scheme, understand what texture I'm expecting from a glaze with it and how the clay underneath will interact with the glaze on top to create that texture as well.
Because mm-hmm.
there are different stages where I could add colour. So I could add it before it's first fired in a bisque, so I could do slips. After it's fired in a bisque, I can do glazing, I can do underglazing, I could paint on it, you know, like there's lots of things you could do. I could even pit fire it, which isn't glazing, but it will give me colour depending on what ingredients I put in the pit
mm-hmm.
as well. So mm-hmm. it's just knowing what you kind of want your final vision to be like.
Yeah.
I think, Maya, we talked about that in your show that you had in Kirikiriroa. We had a long conversation about you using seaweed, I think, in the firing process. Was that right?
For the 100 clay pot series, that was where I'd been firing with Wee Typer and some of his students. There were so many different things that we put into the firing, and you just, if it goes in, you can expect to maybe lose everything because it can go dreadfully wrong. But I think, yeah, glazing's the same. It's a really dicey part of clay making, mm. I think. Was that what you were talking about, Abby?
So it was an experimental process when you were firing with food scraps and whatnot.
Yeah, just similar to what Alex was talking about with the pit. So it was a pit firing.
Oh.
And it gives you all sorts of amazing different tonalities on the clay body. It's like from blacks to browns to like reddish colours. Yeah, it's really beautiful. And Wee's actually coming up to do a pit. He's like the master of doing pit firings. And Coromandel, all of that stuff was done in a wood fire kiln.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that are in the exhibition Bedrock are gas fire. Gas is sort of quite reasonably similar to wood. Yeah.
In what respect achieves a similar effect?
It just seems to bring out quite a natural effect rather than with electric kilns. It just has a really deadened effect. You don't really get the same vibrancy on the surface of the pots. Yeah.
Is that because of a heat? Is it the heat difference? Or is it just all these different properties?
The removal of oxygen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's the vitrification process. Yeah.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
I
I just have a couple more questions. I sort of raised a couple of challenges or problems or issues, but I just wondered if you would like to talk about some of the core problems. We can think of a different term for this, but in your practice, like something that you kind of return to again and again as a kind of gristle that you're wrestling with or that keeps you interested in that process.
I kind of wrestle with when the Nelson seam ran out. Everyone was like, oh, how am I going to buy my clay anymore? And it was kind of frustrating because you can just go out and find it. And, you know, I just find the fact that you can dig up clay and you have to pay like $65 for a bag for, and then it's like dead and not made of nice stuff. And half the stuff you get's like too wet. And then there's, it's just out there and it's got so much more personality and you can have a conversation with it and it's interesting and it means that you have to actually negotiate with the land and the thing and people around you to look after it and have it. Mm-hmm. I just find it irritating when it's just that, that deadened awareness of what you're actually buying. You know, it's just like ignoring the actual understanding of what clay is, and I think that's a precious thing. I think it's just more about like being aware of what you're doing and your hobby is has an impact somewhere, just like, you know, your water ski wrecks the lake and the fish, you know, you gotta look after what you're doing.
Like logic, but a really, really difficult logic.
That's just the thing I think about a lot, is just I want to have conversations with people about where we get our things from and how we look after where we get our things from.
So for you, like sourcing clay that's locally and like just taking the amount you need is like a, is one.
And I like to give back a small pot that I make to that place, and or I return to that place and kind of hang out there. But you don't need to take much to make much, and you don't need to, you don't need to hide that either. I think it's important for you to not just be like, this is my seam and I'm not letting anyone near it, because that's the same thing. It's like just like buying the clay, basically. About being nice to the ground.
And I think the thing I struggle with most is allowing myself to make work about me and not think that I'm telling everyone it's me all the time. and having it open enough that an audience can put themselves in it as well. So I'm working on that all the time. I think I also struggle with being okay with being tangata whenua sometimes, and to deal with my upbringing around that. And I work through that with every piece I end up making. And sometimes that can push me forward and sometimes it can throw me back 10 steps, but just depends which part of the story we're looking at, really. When it comes to making, I feel confident in making most things, But I'm at the moment exploring how different textures work together with clay, so I'm making some embroidery work that can fit together with clay sculpture. So,
sounds cool.
I'd love to do it as tanakul, but... the more hobbies I have, the less time I have to play. So we're working on it. And because I'm currently doing a carving mentorship, so I'm seeing how I can work those things in together and just sort of move forward baby steps. Baby steps, but always in the right direction.
I guess one way of thinking about it is like, if you sort of de-individualise yourself, then you know it's like talking about yourself all the time. You're obviously like very interconnected with a bunch of other things and people.
I have to process a lot about what I'm writing about the work. So I try and get the work done a lot earlier than perhaps I would like to, so that I can have time to sit with it and to, when I write about it, have it open for people. But I have noticed that people will put themselves into work no matter what it is, even if I think it's all about me. So that's been really nice to see.
It's a relationship.
What
about you? What's your problems? You can go wide.
I think like Caitlin summed it really well, like all those sort of issues that you face around like using a material. Just as soon as you're working more intimately with the material, a lot more things become apparent that maybe you weren't thinking about before.
Mm.
Like, it's interesting where I think back, like a few years ago when I first got into clay, people were talking about, oh, it's got to be this sort of porcelain from like Jing Dijian and stuff, and then you have to import it over here and it's the most prestigious porcelain. And then
was it to like achieve a particular finishing?
Well, it's like, just like high value materials. Yeah. I think there's certain clays that are like, this is the pinnacle of clay, and then it's like great that that's that can that doesn't seem to be the conversation now, that like you can talk about local clays and they could be ugly and they could be shit, but you could still make something really rich out of it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as soon as you start dealing with it, probably one of the biggest problems I have is like, I like wood firing and it uses up an enormous amount of wood. And then it's like, why am I doing this? Like, how is this helping? There's like all this like carbon going into the atmosphere for this thing. And then that really makes you think, like, you really have to own it. It's like, if you're going to make this thing, like, that's a lot of effort and you're putting all this stuff into the sky, you've really got to put something into it, maybe. Which is a bit of pressure sometimes.
Yeah. So. We have awesome porcelain here. It just doesn't come to us.
That's true. It just like goes offshore most.
Yeah, it goes into Space Sessions, paper and dental.
Oh,
yeah. In the Toby Bay. Yeah.
Yeah. Cosmetics, it's like beautiful. It feels like a foundation or something.
Right.
Yeah. But we don't get it.
Well, you can. You can just like turn up outside the factory and just surround it.
Have you done that?
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Like a little drainage ditch. Like a little bit of crest back, and I hope that the crest sort of takes off in that little drainage ditch.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't tell them there.
This is sort of a final question. It's also quite a big one, but I just wonder if you could touch on the sort of core narrative that you keep coming back to in your work. Like, if there is a core narrative, I don't know, just like maintains momentum through your practice. I guess that always, like, I always want to come back to narrative, even though this discussion's a bit more about processes and practicalities and, yeah, all the practices that allow that. But I'm just like, I just wondered if you could return to kind of the core idea that's motivating you.
That's big. I think my core narrative is, yeah, again, kind of that same thing. It's just about like feeling in something instead of just like on it. Like, I want to kind of feel sort of swallowed by the hills that I'm in, and think that walking around the Port Hills and maybe like picking up a stone and looking at it, and, or, you know, just having a good sit somewhere. Clay does that for me too, and by feeling sort of connected to the earth, I feel a bit more connected to my body and myself and the people around me, and I can kind of maybe be a better person if I'm able to make stuff. And I've always made things since I was very young. One of my biggest memories is actually like having a large collection of stones hidden in my wardrobe. That is kind of part of me, as I need to make things and I need to feel connected while I'm making them, so I just need to do it, otherwise I think I explode.
Yeah, that's a really convincing motivation.
Yeah.
It's like, all right.
Yeah.
My narrative is always identity and connection, and often I'm trying to work within a piece to figure out within myself where Pākehā and Māori begin and end. And to open that out for people to see different versions of how that story goes and be okay with that, not in an attacking way, but it's so people can understand how exhausting it can be sometimes to not really ever fit in either side.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's about motherhood.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's about autism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But all of it is about connecting. Yeah, and I just want people to feel something.
I think the thing that's happened for me is I found, like, when you're working with clay, once you start making something, the next process is already sort of moving on. It's like, as soon as you start working with the clay, it's drying out and you have to be doing something else before the next step is happening. And so I just feel like the more work with clay, the more things kind of snowball anyway. That's been the thing. I think that's what keeps me going. I don't know if that's the narrative. It's just like
Yeah, it's almost like the material is really dynamic.
It's so lovely. Like, it's just like it will like carry you along. And yeah. It's like, that's really fantastic. And it's more than just the clay. It's like once you work with the clay, there's like a knowledge about like land and then people as well, like the communities that exist there. When one isn't working, you can sort of move into the other, or like you'll just move that way anyway, which is just like lovely.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps me doing it, I think.
That's such an interesting answer. Yeah. Maya, did you want to respond to that as well? There's no question.
I think my narrative, I see a lot of similarities to what Alex is sort of touching on. It's sort of like personal identity and really connecting with people. I think that's really important and fundamental to the work that I'm doing. And as you can see with the work that's in the space, is like wanting the audience to activate those pieces. Yeah, so I think that's my core narrative, being tangata whenua, but having a relationship with also my Pākehā side. So that obviously comes through. So there's that as well. Yeah.
Thanks, Maya. Really? We draw this to close. I really want to thank you guys. I know it's really difficult to talk about something. Maybe it's not so hard for you because we're like actually don't do anything. it's really a lot to be able to talk about and around and through your practice. So I really, really appreciate that. And I think you've really shared some amazing things about your process and your ideas. So we'll bring this back to the close. So thank you.
That was Alex Ashworth, Caitlin Clark, Dave Marshall, and Maya McDonald talking about working with clay. Come in and see the unique forms and textures of Maya McDonald's ceramics in our current exhibition, Bedrock, before the exhibition closes on Sunday, the 30th of May. The gallery is open 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Tuesdays through Fridays and 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturdays and Sundays. Thank you for listening and tune in again next month on Friday, 18 June, at 8 p.m. for our next episode of Art, Not Science. Mā te wā.
The Physics Room is generously supported by Creative New Zealand, the Christchurch City Council, the Rata Foundation, Three Boys Brewery, Scientech, Resine Paints, and the Crater Rim.